Last time we had 8 GGN, we almost like were rushing because they were back-to-back presentations. I've since requested AG to prepare and rehash some few slides that they presented last time that they were here with us, so that we could then be able to have a continuity on today's presentation. I'm pleading with the members, let us allow the first part of rehashing what they presented, including presenting a global picture of health in the country and the entities, and we make a stop there, understanding this, before they then come into provinces. So it will help us well to get them to rehash what they presented last, which we needed to, so we can have a continuation. Then they do the overall presentation of the department and entities and stop at that level. We engage, then we should. You could then see that the flow into provinces will be now with a snapshot overview going in to see where are challenges. Because it helps us even to understand, because then we can be able to see there are provinces that are continuously doing relatively well, and there are provinces that are continuously having got challenges. And now we know overall challenges in health is on finances, on procurement, on infrastructure, on assets, and all those issues. So we can be able to zoom in easily as to which province is really having challenges of these four or five things. So let me then request that all of the members will deal with that. AG, you are the last people to meet with us here, so we are not going to reintroduce ourselves to you. But when I point members to start getting their input, that's when then they will introduce themselves, say, I'm Honorable Tenjekwayo, these are my questions. So now we just shoot straight to you. You are free to introduce a big delegation. It looks like you put a train here. You could, a plane was there. Took how many seats on the plane? I now know that AG does not travel on business class. Because if they were on business class, they were not going to fit.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'll start by way of introduction. I'll hand over to each individual member from my right-hand side, and we'll go all the way down, and then we'll start there and work it all the way up, introducing our delegation. My name is Andries Segeto. I'm the business executive responsible for the health portfolio, amongst others, within the unit that I lead in the Office of the Auditor General.
My name is Taborum Sisinyani. I'm the senior manager responsible for the health portfolio.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Eugene Dehaan. I'm the deputy business executive responsible for the unit, of which health is one of the portfolios.
Good morning. My name is Tiama Sajaya. I'm one of the audit managers within the health portfolio.
Good morning. My name is Maud Madondo. I'm the senior manager responsible for information systems audit.
Good morning. My name is Chirizin Pepu. I'm the deputy business executive responsible for IT audits. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Penny Ramwedzisi, and I'm a senior manager in the Office of the Auditor General.
Toma Gusauga. I'm a professional civil engineer. I'm with the Performance Audit Business Unit within the AGSA. Thank you very much.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Clotilde Oliphant. I'm a public health medicine specialist and on the health portfolio of the AGSA.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Marijke Snijgaans, senior manager at the Auditor General from the Performance Auditing Business Unit.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, colleagues. The two members still at the back.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Beauty Miende, audit manager for our Medical Research Council.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is
responsible for the machine.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Unfortunately, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the size of the delegation is also reflectant of the size and the quantum of the information that we are also here to share with you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Not to scare you in any way, but it's also reflectant of the fact that as the Office of the AG, we've identified the health portfolio as one of the key portfolios in the public sector space, not only for the qualitative work that we do in terms of healthcare, but also in terms of the budget, because obviously it is linked to our mandate as the Office of the AG. We focus on matters related to public finance, and therefore because of the size and the nature and of the amount of money that goes into the health sector, it's also quite a key focus area for us as the Office of the AG. Honorable Chairperson, the scope and the nature of the presentation we're about to do here today, you will note, consists of a number of specific key themes. So I'd just like to break it down for Honorable Chairperson and latch on to what Honorable Chairperson alluded to earlier on during the intro. The first part of the slides will just give a high-level intro, what is it that the AG does, the type of audit outcomes that we issue, and then we'll then go with under the guidance and the direction of the chairperson. We'll then deal with the, some of the content that we discussed previously, which deals specifically with the expansion of the AG's powers in terms of the Public Audit Act adjustments that have been recently implemented and promulgated and implemented. And then we'll then move over to the actual outcomes of the national department and its entities. Bearing in mind, because obviously the national department and the entities, because it's PFMA, they report directly to the portfolio committees, and then later on we'll then also deal with the provincial departments, although those outcomes and those results have been shared with the respective provincial legislatures, but we'll just, for the purpose of the portfolio committee, do a summation and a consolidation of the entire outcome. So you'll see outcomes for the 10 departments. So it'll be the national department, including the 9 provincial departments. And then included in there, Honorable Chairperson, of the latter part of the presentation will also be some work that we've done specifically at the high-level summation on one of the key programs we've identified, which is the HIV grant as well. We'll give you a high-level feedback in terms of the planning, the budget spending, and any compliance matters that we would have noted linked to the grant. It's not very long, Honorable Chairperson. It's about one or two slides, but just for your own benefit, so you can look at it at a snapshot level. And then we'll also look at, finally, specific key focus areas which the Office of the AG did in terms of our sector approach. So it's important that we understand that we do the work as mandated by the Constitution and the Public Audit Act, where we issue the audit outcomes, but over and above that, on an annual basis, we also sit back as the Office of the AG and say, but hold on, there's a lot of money that's going into this sector. Let's look at a sector-wide how well they fared in terms of certain key programs or objectives. Some of the key focus areas, we'll then deal with them. For example, infrastructure or the status of IT within the entire sector, meaning the national department and then also the 9 provincial offices. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, I'll be doing the introduction up until I hand over to my colleague, Mr. Dahan. I tend to be quite excited when I present, Chairperson, and tend to speak fast. So at any given point in time, if any member has missed something or something was not clear, please feel free to stop me, and I'll gladly explain again what I was saying. So, Honorable Chairperson, in terms of the handouts, we'll start with the where's the name of the the national department and the entity. So Honorable Members should be looking at those handouts. And the reputation promise, it's important that we take a moment here to pause, as I've reflected earlier on, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, that the Office of the AG, our specific purpose is we try and build public confidence over and above just giving some form of feedback in terms of the numbers, but we do it linked to our mandate by conducting the audits that we ensure that our country's democracy is strengthened by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector. And as we do all, like I've mentioned, through the work that we do in terms of our audits. The role that we are currently engaged with, the order of the business today, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, is to come and brief the oversight committee such as yourself. We know on an annual basis, entities and departments will come to Parliament. They will make certain promises and commitments to us, and then the portfolio committee will then approve such a budget based on such commitments and promises that they've made in terms of the plans. And it's important that at the end of the period, there's a reflection process or reflective process where now we reflect on whether they were able to successfully achieve those commitments and promises that they've made in terms of the target, because the money would have been spent, and we must look at whether there was a proper correlation in terms of that. That then assists oversight structures as yourself to better plan for the next cycle and make sure that we are really making a difference in the lives of our citizens out there by making sure that people are held accountable. So the whole process is for us to come and brief the portfolio committee in terms of the audit outcomes so that the portfolio committees can consider this information in terms of its process of producing a budgetary review and recommendations report. So, Honorable Chairperson, I'm going to quickly jump to slide number this one. So this is important that we quickly lay the foundation before we start dealing with the actual outcomes. So when Honorable Chairperson, my colleagues will be briefing the Portfolio Committee on the outcomes, it is always important that the committee members and Honorable Chairperson bear in mind that as the Office of the AG, in terms of the Public Audit Act, we must give feedback on three areas. The first one is the state of financial management. So that is your methods of accounting, whether the entities were able to get the debits and the credits right, whether the books are balancing as we commonly refer to it. So 1 plus 2 must equal 3, and that's where now we refer to the financial opinion, the outcomes. Financially unqualified, qualified, disclaimer, that's what we deal with when we look at the first section. So that's the numbers, how well entities were able to account for their affairs as and when they were executing their day-to-day activities. The second aspect that the Office of the AG must give feedback on is in terms of the reliability of the reporting of the performance information of the departments and entities. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, I'm quite deliberate in saying the reliability in which they have reported, because the Office of the AG does not audit specifically service delivery, but we do... Sorry, Honorable Chairperson, sir. Number 23. I apologize. Yes, ma'am. I apologize. I just need to lay the foundation so that when we deal with the outcomes, Honorable Member, that we understand what the colors means. I do apologize for not having...
Slide number
3. 23, Chair. Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the indulgence. So, Chair, as I was saying, the Office of the AG does not specifically audit service delivery. But what we do, Chair, is an entity or department will come to Parliament and they will say, give me X amount of money, I'm going to achieve 10 targets. And as and when they're executing throughout the year, let's say for argument's sake, by way of example, they only achieve 2. But they put in their performance reporting that they've only achieved 2. And the information for the 2 is there, and there's evidence that they did not achieve more, so which means that they have correctly reported and reflected on the actual performance. They cannot get significant findings from the Office of the AG because they would have reported accurately and reliably. It then becomes the role of oversight to then say, you promised me 10, but you only delivered 2, so what went wrong, and have those engagements. So it's quite important that we understand the Office of the AG only gives feedback in terms of how reliable they were able to report in terms of their performance in the annual performance report. The third aspect that the Office of the AG gives feedback on, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, would be the status of compliance. So this means to the extent to which a department or an entity was able to observe key financially related laws and regulations in its day-to-day activities. And again, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, you would know that we are quite deliberate in saying there are a number of laws and regulations that departments and entities must comply with, but because of our mandate, we focus on those that primarily have a financial bearing or a financial impact, and that's why you'll see a lot of our feedback insofar as it relates to compliance is mainly focused on supply chain management and those transactions that could have a financial impact. By way of example, departments and entities must comply with the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, but we don't specifically assess that and give feedback on that if it does not have or result in a financial implication. So we only focus on those. To this extent, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, you would also notice that when you look at the report of the Office of the AG, within that one report, there are actually 3 sub-reports. There will be a report on the financial statements, which says you are financially qualified or unqualified. Then there will be a report on your reliability of your reporting, which is where we give you key findings on performance information. And then we also give you a report on the compliance, where now we note the instance of non-compliance that may or may not have been noted in the environment. So I think that's important that we understand, because we audit those three areas, and because we audit those three areas, on slide number 4, we use those three areas as the basis for giving our outcomes. The reason why I did it like that, Honorable Chairperson, on slide 24, the next slide after 23, you would note the 5 blocks that the Office of the AG gives feedback on. So once the work is done, this is the types of feedback that you would an entity would normally receive from the Office of the AG. Now, the reason why it was important for us to start with slide number 23 is because when we say an entity is financially unqualified with no findings, or what we commonly refer to as a clean audit, it means that they should have passed the test on all those three areas that were contained on slide number 23. You should be financially unqualified, you should have no significant findings on your performance reporting, and you should have no significant findings on your status of non-compliance. And only if you meet all three of those criteria do you then qualify to get an unqualified opinion with no findings, or what we commonly refer to as a clean audit. The next block, Honorable Chairperson, is the yellow block, which is financially unqualified. So which means, from a financial point of view, those entities or departments were able to get 1 plus 2 equals 3 to balance. So the debits and the credits, they were able to get right. However, unfortunately, they would have then incurred a significant finding on either status of compliance or on their performance information. Therefore, they are financially unqualified, but they've got findings on the other two remaining areas. The remaining three types of outcomes a department or an entity can obtain, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, is now where, ideally, we do not want to be as a department or an entity. Those are now where, in certain instances, they were not able to account for certain matters. That's the middle block. It's a qualified opinion. A qualified opinion means, if you look at a set of financial statements, what we normally used to know as a balance sheet and an income statement, it will consist of a number of line items: your revenue, your expenditure, your employee cost, your assets. Maybe one of those items in the financial statement they were not able to account for correctly. That's a qualification. And you'll see our opinion will also say, except for assets, the rest of it is fine. So that's what a qualification means. It means we're happy, but except for those two areas, which are two or three areas, which would then be highlighted. The difference between a qualification and an adverse and a disclaimer is the pervasiveness of the problem that the audit would have then detected. So as soon as you start moving into adverse and disclaimer, it means the quantum or the extent of the problems was quite pervasive, and therefore it hits a number of those financial statement line items. So maybe now you don't just have a problem with expenditure, you now have a problem with revenue, expenditure, assets, and maybe other financial statement line items contained. So the difference between an adverse and a disclaimer audit opinion, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, an adverse opinion is now where we've done work. The evidence suggests that the entity should have disclosed something. Management do not do the necessary disclosures, and therefore you sit with a disagreement that is both material and pervasive, and that's under the circumstances under which an entity will obtain an adverse opinion. And then a disclaimer opinion is the what we commonly refer to as the worst outcome an entity can get, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and that's for the sole reason that in this instance, the entity did not even attempt to give us supporting information. Therefore, the Office of the AG cannot express a conclusion on the set of financial statements that's been submitted. And that normally would be material and pervasive, meaning that we are so limited, we can't say whether what management has put on the table there should be left or right. Because normally, at least when there's a disagreement, you've got evidence, it's just a matter of somebody going and making those adjustments. You know what to go and correct. So, Honorable Chairperson, with the context of the background we have provided in terms of the audit outcomes, in terms of how we must interpret them, the work that we do. So when you see our presentation, you'll note a number of colors contained in the graph that will talk to these types of outcomes. And that's why, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission and indulgence, we jump through the slide just to set the scene and make sure there's a common understanding of the terms and the colors we'll be using throughout the actual presentations. We will now jump back to slide number 5. And with that, Chairperson, I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Mr. Eugene Dahan, to just deal with the side of the presentation that was requested to just be reconfirmed again by the portfolio committee.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honorable Members. So I'll be taking you through the next set of slides, which talks about our expansion of our mandate, And just to give clarity in terms of, you remember, when I came here in, I think it was 18th of September or 17th September, I had an introduction session with the Portfolio Committee where I presented the set of slides, and we had to rush through them quite a bit, and then the Honourable Chairperson asked that we just re-present them again, because they are quite important, and I'll give some examples as we go through of where health might have some of these issues going forward that the committee should be aware of. So basically, I move to slide number 6. So what I'm going to actually explain is the trend of the actual audit outcomes and why we requested the expansion of the mandate. So the first set of slides will explain for you the picture as to how government has performed in the last 10 years in terms of audit outcomes. It will then also specify in terms of fruitless and wasteful, unauthorized and irregular expenditure. So if you look at slide number 6, you will note in terms of the colors that my colleague explained just now, you will see that there has been actually little improvement over the last 10 years. From left to right, you start with 2008-09, and then you move to 2017-18, and you'll see that basically the green where we want to be is actually not improving as such, and there is an up and down trend, but overall the department is not, or the government is not moving in the right direction. We also notice this is not only provincial government or national, this also includes local government as a whole. In terms of irregular expenditure, the next slide, slide number 7, in this slide what we are depicting is to indicate in terms of the trend of irregular expenditure, again from left to right being 2008 up to 2017, where you'll indicate, where you will notice that the irregular expenditure increased quite drastically from about 1.5 billion to about 50 billion over the last 10 years, with a big spike in 13-14, and then again coming down, but then again moving up. So what this indicates is the fact that you will recall irregular expenditure, meaning that non-compliance of prescribed legislation, mainly relating to supply chain management legislation, and what we are identifying then is that the five pillars of supply chain has not been complied with as defined in the Constitution 217. You will also notice on the slide there's a block at the top left corner of the slide, where you will notice that from these balances, which is actually quite alarming, is the fact there's quite a substantial amount that has not been dealt with. What does this mean? So this means that from the consequence management in terms of the PFMA and MFMA legislation, once a regular expenditure has been identified, it then needs to be investigated either by the accounting authority or accounting officer, and certain steps need to be taken as to how it should either be recovered, who's liable, and how it's going to be prevented going forward. So what is quite alarming, you'll see there's quite a number of, or it's quite a big amount that has actually not been dealt with, meaning that the investigations have not yet taken place. We'll give you a slide further down to explain exactly the impact. Then the same for fruitless and wasteful expenditure, again, the orange line being local, national and provincial government, and the blue one being local government. Again, both governments increasing substantially over the years. Unauthorized expenditure also the same, increasing for local government, and for national and provincial government, the remaining more or less the same. It actually came down from the prior years. But again, unauthorized, indicating the fact that the grants were not spent for the intended purpose. Now, if we come to slide number 10, so this is the most important slide for members to note, and the reason why we requested the additional powers. So as you will note, if we just look at the left-hand side, which is the irregular expenditure, I'm going to use that as an example. On the irregular expenditure slide, of the 194 million that's been identified for the 16-17 and 17-18 financial years, you'll notice that the green at the top, which is 9 million or less than 1%, that's the only amount that's actually been dealt with correctly in terms of the PFMA, which is alarming because it's less than 1% of the total balance. And then the red or the pinkish color is the actual amount that has not yet been dealt with at all. So that just then gave rise to us to actually request additional powers as to how we're going to make sure the accounting officers and accounting authorities are actually executing their mandate and complying with the PFMA and MFMA in doing consequence management going forward. Then what we also identified is the root causes. So you will, these on the left-hand side of the slide, there are three main root causes we identified. These are the general root causes throughout government. And I do want members to please take note of the root causes, because when we get down later into the presentation for the department, you might see some similar root causes being identified at the department that we've identified as being general to government. A few that we need to highlight is also give a bit more detail, is your bullets on the right-hand side, which talks about the blatant disregard for controls and compliance. And also from our side, where we make continuous recommendations for management to follow up, and that is not being implemented from management or the authority side. We also identified a continued capacity gap and vacancies and instability has also been creating main root causes for negative audit outcomes. And then we also identified unethical behavior and no consequence management being implemented. It should be noted on slide number 12 that the Public Audit Act extension was not the first initiative that we tried as an office. There's been regular interactions from our side to try and make bring our message across better to those charged with governance, to make sure that they understand exactly as to what is meant of our recommendations and how they should move forward in improving audit outcomes. So as you can see, there are quite, we had door-to-door roadshows that the AG himself conducted in various provinces and continuously throughout the country. We also then have the status of record review as an early warning system where we will come in during the interim period and we'll look at some of the major concerns, and then we'll try and highlight some of these risks to those charged with government for them to actually address it going forward. So there's some of the different initiatives that we've done. Then if we move to the actual expansion on slide number 14, so there are three main areas that came from our expansion of our mandate. And one of them is the referral of material regularities to our relevant bodies. What this means is that once we've identified a material irregularity and we have identified that we might need additional resources or specific skills, we can then refer it to other Chapter 9 institutions who can then execute those investigations on our behalf. Once done, the recommendations will then be filtered back to us for us to follow up going forward to make sure it's actually being implemented. The second one is then the taking a binding remedial action. What this means is that we will go through the audit process. We will then identify material regularity, of which I'll come to the next slide of the definition of material regularity. And then we will then ask the accounting officer to actually do recommendations as to how the accounting officer, accounting authority, are going to address the actual material regularity going forward. If we find that those recommendations are not sufficient, we can then make specific recommendations from our side to be included in our audit report, and that becomes binding remedial action with specific deadlines for them to implement. If the accounting officer or authority fails to implement those remedial action or recommendations, we can then move forward with the process of issuing a certificate of debt. This is obviously just in a nutshell. There are quite various steps in between as to when you will reach the stage of issuing a certificate of debt, but we do have it within our powers at this point in time where there's been blatant disregard for our Public Audit Act process to then move forward to issuing a certificate of debt. It needs to come, what the committee and honourable members need to take note of is the fact that we will issue the certificate of debt in the accounting authority's name or accounting officer's name, and it will not be in the position. So even if the person or the board or the accounting authority moves to different positions, they will still be held liable going forward. Then we get to the definition of material irregularity. We broke it down into two parts. First of all, the irregularity being the any non-compliance with contravention of legislation. And then there's an additional part that talks about the fraud, theft,
in a breach of fiduciary duty, and that was identified during the audit and that resulted in a likely loss. So, or it resulted in or a likely loss. And then the impact needs to be material loss to the misuse or loss of material public resource or substantial harm to the public sector institution or general public. So what this means is that once we've identified the material irregularity, we could then move forward with the process for management to actually go and follow up. We'll give you the next slide, I'll give you an explanation as to what's the difference between the material irregularity and normal irregular expenditure. So we move to slide number 16. It talks about examples of material irregularities, and we've got quite a number of examples on the left-hand side, talking from legislation to suspected bribery, a board or a public entity not executing their utmost care, talking about fiduciary duty, and the repeating of disclaimers as such. But I think one example I want to make is to say that within the health sector, for instance, if we identify, let's say, they built a hospital and the hospital has been constructed but it's not being utilized, so it's standing empty, then to a degree that's also a fiduciary duty that is being neglected from that side. We then need to go do an estimation whether or not there has been a likely loss or there's been harm to the public in any way. And from that point, we will then determine whether or not we will then issue a material irregularity to the accounting officer or accounting authority. So that's just one of the instances in terms that talks about fiduciary duty. There are other instances, for instance, where, let's say, there was a procurement of pharmaceuticals, but we identified that the winning bidder were not awarded the contract. Another bidder was awarded the contract at an excessive price. We can then do an estimation to determine what should the goods have been purchased for, and we will then assess whether or not there's actually a material financial loss. So those are some of the actual examples that relate directly to the health sector. So what's the difference between irregular expenditure and material irregularity? So one thing that needs to be noted, irregular expenditure is only the contravention of legislation. But the material irregularity goes further. It talks about not only the contravention of legislation, but it talks about fraud, theft, and the breach of fiduciary duty, and it needs to result in a financial loss or harm, substantial harm, to the public or to a material public resource. So that's the main difference. As you can see, the material irregularity has got a much more comprehensive definition as in terms of the regular expenditure. Difference in impact between regular expenditure and material irregularity is that for a regular expenditure, the accounting officer or authority needs to determine whether or not there was actually a loss or what's the impact to the department. With a material irregularity, that is something that we've already determined, that to say that there has already been an impact or there's a likely impact that's going to occur going forward. If we then move to slide number 18, in terms of the actual legal obligations of the accounting authority and accounting officer, you will note that once we've issued the material irregularity, it is the obligation of the accounting officer to respond to us within 20 days in terms of the recommendations that he or she or the accounting authority will implement to address the material irregularity going forward. There are quite a number of steps that need to be taken. They need to explain as to what they will do to prevent any losses going forward, institute a formal investigation. If there are any indicators of fraud or corruption or criminal conduct, they need to report as such. They need to recover any financial losses from external parties and also take steps against the official. The next slide, slide 20, talks about oversight initiatives. So on the left-hand side, you'll see those are some of the oversight initiatives that have been implemented in the past. And on the right-hand side are some of the gaps that we've identified that the oversight structures may look at to actually improve the initiatives that have been identified. So some of the gaps we've identified is that some of the audit outcomes and internal control failures that have been identified have not been prioritized by the committee or the oversight structures to actually understand as to what led to that and to actually get an in-depth understanding from the department or the entities to come and report as to how they're going to actually address those internal control deficiencies going forward. There's also been various in-ear monitoring reports that have been very reactive instead of preventative, but to identify actually risks going forward for the entities. Then the next slide, slide 21, talks about the role of oversight and executive authority. And from this, the oversight structure, we have highlighted to the committee before that the committee can at any time make use of the audit report in terms of material irregularities that have been identified and request the accounting officer, accounting authority, or even the audit committee to come and do presentations as to how they are actually monitoring the process of material irregularity recommendations, or even normal addressing of in terms of audit findings from internal audit and external audit as to how the department are actually executing oversight. I'll then hand over to my colleague Tabello to take us through the actual audit outcomes for National Health and its entities.
Thank you, Honourable Members, and thank you, Chair. I will then move to the slide that relates to the audit 18-19 audit outcomes. The first few slides after this are the ones that my colleague here has gone through, so we'll then go to slide 25. In slide 25, we are just giving something to note as we go through the presentation. The first part is that when this whole presentation is based on six audits that we did, unless otherwise indicated. When you look at the definitions of the audit outcomes, I think my colleague here has also gone through it. And at the bottom of the slide, we're giving the abbreviations that we use throughout the slide. For example, where the NGOH is the National Department of Health and the CMS is the Council for Medical Schemes. The next slide talks to the accountability model. So, few years ago, the Office of the AGSA adopted this accountability rule where we believe that if this accountability plan is followed, there would be possible an improvement in audit outcomes. So what the accountability model says, for us to improve our audit outcomes, there needs to be a plan. And in the planning phase, this is where targets are and indicators are defined, and in defining them, we make sure that there are systems in place to ensure that the targets will be achieved. So we are just not defining targets without making sure that there's underlying systems and control in place that will ensure that the targets are achieved. After planning this, we then need to implement the basics, which means that we need to make sure that there are internal controls that are designed and implemented in the department and entities to ensure that we are able to achieve our mandate, our targets. There also needs to be supervision by different levels in the dependent entities to make sure that we are able to meet the target. Then the next leg is then the checking. So after we've defined what we want to achieve and we've implemented the basics or the controls, we need to make sure that there is constant checking by the different level of assurance. This is to make sure that there is oversight or monitoring that takes place in the whole process. So as you see in the presentation, when we present, you'll see we are able to indicate which part of the accountability will add. So with assurance providers, there's two level of assurance provider. We have first level of assurance providers, which are the assurance providers that are involved in the day-to-day operations of the department, the entities, and they also are involved in the decision-making. And then we've got second level of assurance provider, which are the independent assurance providers, i.e. the internal audit or the audit committee. So these assurance providers need to make sure that they are monitoring what we have planned to achieve and the fact that internal controls are working for us to achieve better audit outcome. In that process, we then have a leg which is ACT, which is the consequence management. So what we're saying is it's not just about implementing the basics and checking. There need to be consequence management taking place wherever there is transgression in the process. So what you see is most in the department entities, they are fine with the planning and they're doing the checking. However, there is a lack of consequence management that takes place in the process. Some of it is because they do initiate investigations. However, investigations take long to be concluded, and therefore consequence management does not take place. So we're saying in this model, if we are able to make sure that those building blocks are followed, there is a possibility of improved outcomes and also possibility of a better service delivery to the citizens. The next slide deals with the actual audit outcomes in the 2018-19 for the portfolio. Overall, from the 17-18, there has been an improvement in the portfolio, and this was due to the MRC that in 16-17 was clean. However, in 17-18, they had findings, and in the 18-19, we see them improving again to obtain a clean audit outcome. The NHLS also improved in 17-18. They were qualified, and in the current financial year, they now received an unqualified with findings opinion. The portfolio also had an addition of a new entity, SAPRA, and in the current year, SAPRA was qualified, and this was due to the lack of controls over proper record keeping to ensure that valid, relevant, and complete information are supporting what they have presented. We also want to note that the CMS and the NGOH remain stagnant in the current financial year. I think it's worth noting that the department has been receiving unqualified funding for a number of years, even beyond the 5 years that we note on that. Would also want to commend the OHSC for maintaining the clean audit outcomes. Usually when entities obtain clean audit outcomes, the challenge becomes on maintaining that status. So with OHSC in the current year, we noted that they actually maintain the clean audit outcomes, and we commend them for that. The next slide deals with credibility of financial reporting. So in this slide, the first section that talks about submission of financial statements, we were looking at all the auditors, including CCOD. If you recall, in the previous session, we did highlight the fact that CCOD is still outstanding. However, the 2014-15 and 15-16 financial year has been audited. They just have not been tabled to the committee. So for the first line there, we did include CCOD, where we're saying of the seven entities, CCOD and NHLS did not submit financial statement on time. So the other auditees submitted the financial statements as per the legislation date. However, when going forward, we then excluded CCOD since they have not submitted the financial statements. Of the financial statements submitted, only OHSC and MRC did not have material misstatement in the financial statements. The rest of the entities in the department had material errors. However, after the audit process was completed, NHLS, CMS, and the NDOH were able to obtain unqualified recruitment because they were able to correct all the material misstatements that were identified during the process. As indicated earlier, SAPRA was qualified in the current year, and the qualification area was around revenue, deferred income, and operating expenditure, and this was really due to the lack of controls with regards to the proper record keeping, where some of the information they did not have registers in place to be able to check the applications that they received. And since they did not have that controls, it then impacted on both revenue and deferred income, as well as the outcomes we'll see in the performance information. The next slide talks to the credibility of performance reporting. What we've noted is that all entities, the department entities in the current year submitted annual performance report that had material misstatements. So none of the APRs that were submitted were free of material misstatements. However, through the audit process, the CMS, the OHS, and the MRC were able to make necessary amendments, and that's why they don't have findings on the audit report regarding performance information. The NGOH, the NHLS, and SAPRA still had corrections that they couldn't make, and hence in their audit reports they have findings relating to AOPO. Most of the findings after we identified is reliability. I think my colleague mentioned on what reliability of the information reported achievement is, where the what they have reported they couldn't substantiate with supporting evidence. The next slide that we are going to deal with is compliance with laws and regulations, slide 30. So in this slide, we look at compliance with laws and regulations that has an impact on financial reporting. If you look at the bottom left with the graphics, the Council for Medical Schemes, the NGOH, NHLS, and SAPRA had material findings reported in their audit report regarding compliance with legislation. The majority of the compliance areas are on the right of the slide. The first one being the quality of financial statements. So you're saying financial statements that were submitted were not free of material misstatement. The PFMA requires that the financial statement reported for audit needs to be free of material misstatements. That means the department and its entities, they need to already have internal controls in place to make sure that the financial statement they submit for audit are free of material misstatements. So in the current year, it was only MRC and OHSC that submitted financial statements that were free of material misstatements. Even though the NGOH, the NHLS, and the CMS received unqualified opinion, they had to make material amendments, and hence they have a compliance finding on quality of financial statements. The other area of compliance was the management of procurement and contracts, where we are noting that the NHLS, the CMS, and SAPRA did not comply with specific laws and regulations to Treasury when they were procuring certain services in the current year. And this would be, I would talk to when I get to the slide on supply chain management. The NHLS had a compliance finding on prevention of regular expenditure because in the current year they still continue incurring irregular expenditure. The one finding as well is relating to the fact that NHLS was not able to submit their financial statements within 2 months of year-end, and hence they have a material finding relating to compliance with laws and regulations. The slide on internal controls, one thing we'd note on the top, it says excluding CMS and OHSC. Currently, the CMS and OHSC, due to its size, in the AGSA, we've classified it as small ODT. So we don't assess their internal controls as well as the assurance providers. The next slide. When we look at this internal controls, we're saying for the portfolio to improve, there are specific internal controls that they need to make sure that are working. So our internal controls are subdivided into three headings. We have leadership, we have financial and performance management, as well as governance. So when you look in the sector, more work really needs to be done regarding financial and performance management. And hence, in the slide, that's where we see a lot of yellow, which is of concern, and red, which intervention required. For example, when you look at proper record keeping, SAPRA really struggle with their record keeping, and hence they have been qualified. So we're saying that internal control and proper record keeping needs to be strengthened so that they can improve their audit outcomes. They also had a problem, especially with operating expenditure, where they could not provide to the auditors with supporting information on operating expenditure. The NGH, NHLS, and MRC had similar findings. However, they were not as severe as at SAPRA. That's why the thing is concerned. Daily and monthly controls as well is another internal control deficiency that we noted in the portfolio, specifically on SAPRA, because they were not reconciling the registers as they were as they were going through the year. At the end of the year, when they gave us the annual performance report, they could not give us the results that then tied to what has been reported because there was absence of daily and monitoring controls. Review and monitor compliance as well talks to also the slide that I just mentioned before to say there was no review and monitor of compliance, and hence we have compliance findings reported in those entities, that section. Moving to the next slide of assurance providers, we have two levels of assurance provider as we indicated earlier. The first level being the senior management accounting office, accounting authority, and the executive authority. This is the assurance providers that are involved in the day-to-day running or approving a transaction. One thing that would note with this slide is we have concerns with regard to senior management and accounting officer. This then that links to the internal controls that we have indicated in the previous slides, where we say that there's work needs to be done on financial and performance management. And we look at that where this is the work that's mostly done by this level of assurance, actually the senior management. The second level of assurance we have is the internal audit and the audit committee. Would want to note that usually would have included this committee as well, because as this committee exercises oversight role, they also actually provide assurance on what the departments present in the entity. However, since the committee is new in the current year, we haven't assessed them. But going forward, we will also start assessing the committee on the oversight role they are playing on the department and its entities. So what's worth noting with the second level assurance at SAPRA is internal audit was no assurance provided, and this was due to the fact that since SAPRA is new, they had an MOA between the National Department of Health and them to say the internal audit at the National Department of Health will assist them. However, due to capacity issues at the NGOH, the internal audit could not assist them. the SAPRA, and hence they are assessed as no assurance. This can also be linked to the audit outcomes we see at SAPRA, because usually if internal audit comes in to do the independent checks, they would have picked a number of internal control deficiencies and they would have corrected it. But because they were absent, this is the qualification that we see on SAPRA. The next slide deals with financial management. Usually in financial management, we would have, slide 34, we would have irregular expenditure, fruitless, solicitous, and unauthorized. So we do not have a slide on unauthorized expenditure because the department has not had unauthorized expenditure for the number of years, even in the current year. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure as well, we don't have a slide on it. What we've noted is in the portfolio, some entities don't have any fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and those that had, for example, the NGOH, they were able to swiftly investigate, and some of that fruitless and wasteful expenditure has either been transferred to recoveries or has been recovered. And that's the reason why they have less fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the entity. In the insurance portfolios. This slide deals with irregular expenditure. When you look at this slide, there has been an increase in regular expenditure from last year from 2.6 billion to 3 billion. This was mainly due to irregular expenditure at the NHLS. 99% of the current year regular expenditure, which is 3 billion, relates to irregular expenditure incurred at the NHLS. The nature of irregular expenditure we have is procurement made on expired contracts, specifically at the NHLS. The reason being is I think the committee is aware of the challenges that the NHLS has been having. So in the prior years, there have been some of the contracts that were entered into either without board approval. However, since the NHLS is busy procuring new contracts, but since service delivery needs to continue, they are forced to keep using the old contracts that have expired so that they can provide service. And when they continue doing that, it then results in regular expenditure. We also had instances of procurement from a panel that was not established in terms of treasury regulations, which was at the NGOH and CMS. We can confirm that they are in the process of setting up a new panel. So the same principle exists to say, since they need to deliver service, they are forced to use the same suppliers in that panel so that they can deliver the service, and hence there is irregular expenditure. There were certain procurement processes that were not followed at the NHLS, the NHCMS and SAPRA, as well as overspending on contracts at the NHLS. At the bottom of the slide, we gave them a grid, and this is because, like I indicated earlier, whenever there's irregular expenditure identified, they are swift in initiating the investigation. However, what we've noted, some of these investigations take long, and consequence management does not kick in because they have not identified the perpetrator. So it's good that they are initiating the investigation. However, the department and its entity needs to be able to conclude on this investigation so that they can hold the perpetrators liable. Slide 35 gives us a breakdown of the irregular expenditure over the 5 years of the portfolio. As indicated earlier, the biggest contributor to the irregular expenditure is NHLS. One thing we need to note, in the current financial year, NHLS has restated their 17-18 irregular expenditure. If you look at the annual report last year, they had disclosed 598 million. However, they also received a qualification on the completeness of that amount. So in management, in the efforts of clearing the qualification, they've identified further irregular expenditure, and then they've gone back and restated their irregular expenditure to 2.5 billion. In the current year, they incurred 2.9 billion, mostly due to contracts that have been running. There's also been a decrease in irregular expenditure at the NGOH as well as the CMS. We commend the OHSC that they do not have irregular expenditure in the current year. The next slide deals with supply chain management. So as part of supply chain management, we look at different parts of the supply chain management process. The most common findings that we identified was the fact that at SAPRA and NHLS, there were some documents in the supply chain management process that were not provided. For example, when we were looking at the audit, maybe they would not have submitted tax clearance certificates to us that was submitted by the bidder. We also had uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes, where in these instances we identified that some of the bidders would have been unfairly dismissed in the process, and also some of them, they would have gone for a deviation. However, the reasons for the deviation would not be justifiable. There was also certain instances at Supernaturalist where the suppliers they were contracting with did not declare interest, and some of them were found to be either they have relatives that are working in the state or they have spouses that are working in the state. So when you look at the graphic that you have, the OHSC and the MRC did not have material findings for production management. The NGOH had findings, but they were not material for them to report in the audit report. And however, CMS and HLS had material findings, and they have been reported in the audit report. Slide 37 gives us a snapshot of the outcomes in the portfolio. As indicated in the first slide, there has been a slight improvement in the outcomes of the portfolio. When you look at clean audits, MRC has joined the clean audits, and now there is two clean audits in the portfolio. When you look at financial unqualified financial statements, NHLS has improved to unqualified with findings. When you look at no findings on performance report, the MRC and the OHSC did not have material findings on performance reporting, as well as the CMS. With no findings on compliance, also the MRC has improved. The bottom part of the slide shows the fact that, however, regular expenditure decreased due to the fact that it was 2.6 billion last year and the current year is 3 billion. The root causes that we've identified, I think my colleague has indicated root causes earlier, that we have identified in the portfolio is that there seem to be slow response to improving key controls and addressing risk areas in the NGOH and CMS. With the NGOH, this is evident a lot in the performance information. When you look at the performance information, they've been receiving material findings for a number of years, and there seem to have been no movement in the area. And CMS is with regards to material findings, material amendments to the financial statements. We also highlight the inadequate consequence for poor performance. And this is what I indicated earlier, that they do start investigations. However, investigations are usually not completed on time, and therefore people are not held liable for the transgression. And then the last root cause is instability of the key and key positions. This was highlighted at SAPRA, and this was mainly because they are new and they're still setting up. And at NHLS, currently there's a number of acting positions at NHLS. The recommendations that we've issued recommendations to the department and its entities to say, with leadership, to say they need to improve their oversight role with regards to financial and performance reporting and compliance as well. And this talks to many that level of assurance where we're saying it remains a concern, where they need to then increase their oversight role. With management, we said they need to implement proper record keeping in a timely manner to ensure that complete, relevant, and accurate information is accessible and available to support performance reporting. And this talks to the proper record keeping we're identifying in the internal control deficiency slides. We also recommended that they need to prepare accurate and complete financial and performance reporting, and this is directly linked to also the monthly and daily controls that we've indicated earlier. They also need to review and monitor compliance on a monthly basis to ensure that they actually prevent the non-compliance before it actually occurs. To the portfolio committee, what we're recommending is that they need to request management to provide feedback on a quarterly basis on the implementation and progress of action plans. What happens is, as we are auditing and we issue findings, when management responds to us, they give us specific action plans they are going to implement to ensure they improve audit outcomes. So those action plans, the committee can request them and then follow up on the progress throughout the year to ensure that by the end of the year, there is improved audit outcomes. We also recommend that they monitor the appointments of the vacancies at NHLS and SAPRA, as it's having an impact on the audit outcomes, as well as request a list of action taken against transgressors. This is to ensure that the departments and entities will eventually conclude on the investigations that they have initiated. Chairperson, this concludes the first part of our presentation relating to the department and its entities.
Honourable members, I have requested that they stop here for now. There are very specific recommendations that they are making to us, which we need to... Mr. Tapela, I would have loved that from the prior knowledge, want to be able to modify that recommendation, monitor of appointments to key vacancies. But there's a background to NHLS that they are still trying to conclude disciplinary processes there. Now, whoever is acting there is acting because they have not been able to conclude that process. Because if we maybe leave it as this, like this, it's okay, but it would be like we are ignoring some of the things that they've already informed us and probably yourself that conclude disciplinary processes that are in place of senior managers, which is going to allow you to then fill up the vacancies. Yeah. Now, they've probably wondered maybe if you could shape it that way. Yeah, it would assist all of us. Honourable members, just on these entities and the whole department nationally, before we can get my highlights of what is happening in provinces. Straightforward recommendations to us, but maybe you can go back to the whole presentation and what we rehearsed some of the things that we knew, which I thought it would be important for us to come to know about them. Honourable members, engagement. Okay. Honourable Munyai, Janji, Honourable Ha, Mtokume Mnyango, Honourable Thembe Kwayo, Honourable Kwakuba, I'll limit you to what is limited to what you listen to. Joking. Honourable Van Staden, let's see. Okay, thank you. That was in that order. Honourable Jacob also, yeah.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think where the areas the people blatantly disregard controls, compliance, recommendations of the AGs, especially even where there's an unethical behavior, and really this tells us there's a money. I understand that we're in fiscal cliff, but there's too much money which are not properly managed within the department. You know, it's too much. I mean, and there's no need, there's no commitment to decrease. I understand some circumstances have been put in with respect to a particular entity and the department as a whole, but it's unacceptably high to have a lot of irregular expenditure. This is part of the budget of government within some certain African state. So this cannot be allowed. It cannot go as usual. But the key issue is that the fail of the consequence management. I think it's very important that you need to work closely with the HOCs or the law enforcement agencies to make sure that those that are found to be, to be in conflict with the law, in terms of really saving public money or misusing the public money, it can't just be ending up with your pronouncement. I know you're trying to amend the legislation to deal with the remedial actions, SAGs, but we can't wait because I know it will come from you. Then SIU must further investigate. It can't be. And people are resigning, changing employment. We have to find mechanism as practical and urgent as possible to work together with the law enforcement agents. There must be as and when process is going on so that they must be able to arrest the criminals. That will really... and where there's a board, I'm saying that which are supposed to conduct oversight in the entities, and situation are not going very well. Example in this case, the Ponding case. I mean, records. You have a CFO. I mean, you can't keep appropriate record and supply chain processes, you know, and records cannot be found. I know, Chairperson, we have to, I know we have to still have to engage with these entities, but this is not acceptable. And I'm saying that, and I'm told, well, I've seen the article of the newspapers that in one entity, the board is at appointing even staff, but the protocols of good governance is that the board should appoint the CEO, then the rest will be done under the CEO. So, but I'm saying that, and to some degree, some entities don't even have an HR. How do you really deal with the issues of the shortages of employees or capacity thereof? So to us, this is not acceptable. it's quite shocking, under, especially under the current conditions, where there's a clear argument of we don't have enough money. But we have the enough money within the system that are regularly spent. And there's nothing that happens. And I mean the issue where there's issues of what? The family members that are doing business with the entities. And then it ends up like that. There's no consequence management. It's not assessed. We want to get the details as and when we follow up, because we'll also be assessed. What progress did we make in dealing with this kind of issues? We can't be found wanting as this portfolio committees where there's no consequence management, or where people are not going to jail for wrongdoing that they could have occurred within the department. If we can't continue to decline, we must decrease. That limitations of resources, which are not limitless, should be able also, they should be in balance in decreasing, not in increasing of irregular expenditure. So if there's an increase, therefore, we must transform these things. If we can't transform it, we must transform the people who are given that responsibilities. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let's appreciate the presentation. The department clearly has not been doing well. There may have been areas that were you could pick up from the previous years, but surely it has not have. It has not been performing as we would expect it to perform, particularly when you look at the irregular expenditure. But what surprised me is that I was trying to look at that accountability, that you've got so much information that you give to these people and they do not perform. The question I have is, now that you've been given some power, how sharp are your teeth? Do you have to, after you investigated and you found some irregularities, do you still have to go to somebody else to report? Or you take the transgressor straight to the people who will deal with the transgressor? On the question of the new child in the block, I think they are very hard on them, but well, I think they will learn through the process that they have to shape up and get their act right. But I think when we met, they really showed that they want to do well. And I think with a bit of encouragement, we will see them doing well. You know what bothers me? In the preview, the FFC presentation, they are talking of the Office of Health Standard Compliance overspent, and yet you gave them a clean audit. How come? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I just want to comment on slide 31 that deals with the status of internal control, where you exclude CMS and OHSC respectively. And to ask, if I need to ask you, is there any proper leadership in SAPRA? Did you check on their qualifications? On how did they meet the requirements? I mean the leadership and whoever is working under finances and the management of the entity as a whole, or were they hired because of their political affiliation, maybe, without any experience to take a person and put that person on such a crucial position that involves such a lot of money. Can I just need to have a response on that, because this is rather worse. While other entities are doing well and they are improving on their previous mistakes, but we still have the red under SAPRA. I think they have to go. It's high time that everybody must go, and then we must find new people to work under SAPRA. It cannot be business as usual during the sixth parliament. Let's start on a clean plate, and I think that will do as well. And then I just would like to know, mention was made of the fact that if there's a problem, they are given 20 days to address that particular problem. My question is to you, is there any conformity to your instruction? Do they conform? Do you have positive a change, or they just disregard the instructions as they come from you? Because obviously if you find a fault and you go to that entity and you make them aware of the fault and you give them the deadline, do they respond? If they don't respond, what are the measures that you do to bring those that are impacted to book? I'm not going to say anything about regular expenditure because that has been exhausted, but my question was mainly on this entity, the SAPRA, and its inability to perform on what is expected of them, and recommend that definitely that the whole committee be dissolved, and then we have new people on board that can be hired, from the board of members to the last one who is a PA in the whole thing. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. My question is almost a follow-up from the engagements we had last. It's a two-part question. One, with the new expanded mandate of the AG's office and considering the magnitude of the irregular expenditure in the department, as Honorable Janki pointed out, what engagements have there been with the Department of Health and in particular with the Minister of Health, in order to give the department an opportunity either to comply or explain why there has been irregular expenditure of public money and where money has gone, has been wasted or has gone missing? Is there a plan in place, as you briefed us the last time, that you've got a various steps that you take to recuperate money? And so what I would want to find out is, has this engagement with the department happened, and in particular with the minister as well? And so what plans are in place? And then the other question is, again, also around the expanded mandate of the AG. The members here have also raised the fact that we have met with the NHLS and they've sort of explained what their problems are. But I want to understand, with the sort of the implications of the expanded mandate, is there scope for the AG's office to be looking at a far more substantive and sort of comprehensive approach to auditing, or is it still going to be very much formulaic and still very much around compliance and, almost a tick box exercise? Because I think there's a lot that goes unnoticed, and there's a lot that doesn't get reflected in the reports because of the nature in which the auditing is done. So I'd like to understand whether or not there has been a shift in that. Will there be a shift in that? Because I think that we will see a far more dire picture once we actually delve deeper into what are some of the root causes and actually what are some of the findings.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, when I see this, it's no wonder we have problems in our health system, which we currently experience. I manage the regulatory expenditure through and through, and also like my colleague next to me said, when are we going to enforce the law according to the Public Finance Management Act? There must be some consequences some way, somehow. It can't ongoing like this, the route we're going on now. It's serious trouble for the department and for ourselves as well. I just want to, on slide 10, the money which we have written off in 2017-18, please just clarify that for me, why? I just need to get confirmation about it, matter. Why was it money written off? Just to clarify. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I smiled when I heard the point that we as the portfolio committee would also be reported on next year. We welcome it. Thank you very much to keep us on our toes. With regards to your expanded mandate which you received on the 1st of April this year, I have three questions basically on that. The one is, I'm certain you'd be able to do your work retrospectively, in other words, going back to see, and up to when would you be doing that, since we know two things here. The two main things with regards to the department is irregular expenditure and then supply chain management problems. Those are the two. And so that's the first point. The second point is your process of certification of debt. You know, is there a method to expedite it? Can it be sped up in any way? And apart from you doing this in a phased approach, now I can understand a phased approach would be because there's probably not the manpower or human power to probably look at every department. Which departments are you prioritizing, and what would be your approach in terms of even expediting that too? And then now you've given a certificate of debt. You've now said to the accounting officer, generally you are now responsible for this X amount of money. Surely there would be a process with regards to that. And then also, what if they don't have any money at that point in time? What would be your further restitution? Thank you very much.
Honourable members, with your permission, may I request this? Look at your slide number 6. I was going to request just taking some of the comments raised by the Honourable members, slide number 6, slide number 7, slide number 8, slide number 9, slide number 10 and 11, or maybe even also 12. I wanted, with the permission of the honourable members, to share these slides with the department that is going to come in next week, because these slides have some similarities to certain things that have happened in the country. We watched the epidemic of HIV going up, and we did intervene, but at a very late stage. If you can look at this graph and show and see that in 2002, this country had almost no HIV. 1997, there was almost no HIV. It was just starting. We watched it. We never did anything right until 2006 started, 2009. That period of leaving things developing like this and getting used to abnormal things as if they are normal creates this thing. So I wanted to, because those slides have really put together, you are packaging a story that says to the Department of Health, why do you observe such a trend, and there are certain remedial actions that are put in place there, and year after year, the graph goes up? Is it because you have a better plan, or you don't want to see these recommendations? Somebody must actually be able to explain. It does matter there's a new change to political leadership. Some of the people have been there for a long, long time in the management board. Look, I hear what Honorable Tendewa is saying about the other entity, which I probably may comment on. But the biggest here has been the Department of Health. Let us call it big slice. Well, this, some of the things that we are raising are going to also be seen in particular provinces. To say, why do we provide you, Department of Health, with this slice 6 up to 11 every year? What do you look like? But also over and above there, what we are suggesting are certain things that can improve your situation, but you don't do it. What plan have you got? Why is this? Exactly as I'm saying, right now we are running around as a country dealing with HIV because it is so huge. At a particular time, it was just starting. We looked at it. We never did anything. So I'm seeing a trend, and I'm sure the Department of Health will understand this better. Because right now, as they are chasing HIV, we would not have been chasing it if we started at a particular level. Here now, we are chasing another thing that if we don't chase it well enough, next stage is going to worse off. There's no trend here that shows that the irregular expenditures are going down. And I've always tried to explain, what is an irregular expenditure? It's spending money rightfully for a job that needs to be done, but without following proper procedures. And I've said, why? Why would you forget that you have a baby today and this baby is born, meaning a tender, and after on the third birthday, this baby, when you celebrate, it won't be effective. You must ask it. So you actually know that on the second birthday of this tender, I must put processes in place so that by the time this baby gets the third birthday, we are ready to kick in a new process. Why do you do that? You don't have to go and fly a helicopter to the moon to understand just those basics. It takes 11 months to put a tender in place. Okay, let's start this one on month 2 of this current contract so that by the time this one comes in, we just kick it in. We can't stop these services because we need them, but you start them on the day it has expired and therefore you incur irregular expenditure. Please, let us ask these questions to the department, and then they may share with us if they have been sharing with this and what have there been responses of the department on these issues. Honorable Tembegoa, without answering your question, this entity used to be called MCC, Medicines Control Council. It became a chaos in the country, and a lot of us are aware of that chaos. And it was such a chaotic thing that nobody was even interested. I don't know, people just almost abandoned this baby to die naturally. It never died, we need it. So now they are coming behind to come and fix it. So I don't know whether it is the competence of the people who are there that is not good, or it is just because the work is just too much that they are trying to make do with what is there, and it is just drowning them. So I think let us find a space, because they are coming next week, so that we also speak to them directly to say, what challenges are you facing, guys? Are you going to see the end of the tunnel someday? And what needs to be done to do that? Well, I think they are really drowning, but the progress is there coming in there before we fire everybody in that department. But honorable members, then do share with us. Be mindful that you are still going to go to another presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, for the questions, comments, and inputs. There were specific questions, but mainly around the Public Audit Act amendments. I'll start and deal with those in support by my two colleagues. So please don't be alarmed when they maybe just chip in to try and assist where I'm trying to respond or give an answer. The first one, maybe whilst we're doing the response, is for us to go and focus on slide number 14, Chair.
while we are responding to the question. So as alluded to, part of the expansion of the mandate, what must be clear is we cannot move away from the constitutional mandate of the Auditor General. The constitutional mandate is still just to audit and to report. However, in terms of our legislation, where we let a bite or the teeth, ma'am, was on an annual basis, we would find the findings and would put the recommendations in the report. However, those recommendations would not be implemented or acted upon. So as a point of departure, the expansion of the mandate still, and it's exactly as it says, expansion of the mandate, we'll always just do an audit first. Bearing in mind that an audit works on the sample, the normal inherent limitations of an audit, so we don't do 100% testing of all the transactions, and also the fact that an audit does not do an investigation, so we'll just still apply the international standards of auditing. However, during our risk planning processes, we try and do it to such an extent that we focus on those key risks in the particular portfolios, and thereby, if you do a proper job of your risk assessment, you should be able to be alive and your audit should be able to respond to those key things in the environment. Hence, you will see we've been identifying the irregular expenditure, we've been identifying the unfavorable audit outcomes as included in the previous slide. So then the idea was, you would recall the I don't want to call it, actually, I must choose my words very carefully, the infamous case where the recommendations of the public protector versus the recommendations of the AG. So the remedial action given by that institution was deemed then that it's required to be implementable, where the recommendations of the AG were not having the same powers, and hence the expansion then says if we have followed a proper process based on the current legislation of Public Audit Act, when we then give you the recommendation to go and correct this, it will now, that's the first part that talks about, that's the second part that talks about taking binding remedial action. So we will do a recommendation in the first year. The accounting officers, because the process has to be administratively fair and just, will have the opportunity to go and see if they can correct, stop, and that's why it's also important that on one of the slides we did indicate what is the responsibilities of the accounting officer once we've communicated to them, so that the process is fair. Once that recommendation has not been implemented, that's now where we start moving into this space. So you've been afforded the fair opportunity to go and fix this in line with your responsibilities bestowed upon an accounting officer or an accounting authority by the PFMA, and now we will tell you exactly now what you must do. It now becomes sort of an instruction or a remedial binding action. You cannot move away from it legally now. So, but the other part of the question was also asked before I move further is that as and when we're doing an audit and you identify the material irregularity that meets the definition that Eugene spoke about, one or two things can happen at the same time. You could have sufficient and appropriate audit evidence to conclude that indeed a material irregularity has taken place. There is sufficient and appropriate audit evidence for you to quantify the impact of it in terms of the financial loss or what the harm to the public was. And in that instance, if there was proper irregularities that have been identified, you can immediately do the referral to the investigative body. Now, the referral to an investigative body obviously is because they will have to do proper investigation to go and determine criminality, which is something that we don't do. We'll have the indicators based on the audit evidence, and we will refer to the SIU or the public protector or the Hawks or whichever other relevant investigative body is there when criminality is suspected and it needs to be followed up. Or you could, like I've mentioned, you conclude that the process is fair, you've got the evidence, and therefore you include the remedial action in the audit report. Again, another time period will be provided to the accounting officer to go and implement that remedial action, stop the contract, hold people accountable. I'm speaking under correction, but I think that's about 6 months, approximately 6 months. Then we will come as the office of the AG, and we'll do a follow-up whether that remedial action has been implemented. If such action has not been implemented, that's now where we say the accounting officer, because the PFMA says the accounting officer or the accounting authority, that's the responsibility in terms of the PFMA. The certificate of debt then gets issued in the name of the accounting officer. However, as Eugene has also mentioned, there will be certain processes that will be engaged in. Like, for example, the one question that was asked with regard to the 20 days, ma'am, is we give them the information. We say you need to follow up. You need to respond within 20 days. They respond back. We evaluate based on the evidence. We then conclude on the action. We put in the audit report. We come back after 6 months. You haven't followed up on the remedial action. We engage again. It then gets submitted to a committee that will evaluate to see what should be recovered from the accounting officer.
the accounting officer will have right of reply, obviously, and they have to come back to the AG, provide oral or written submissions in terms of why the certificate of debt should not be issued and the process that they have maybe started implementing in the meantime. So it's a whole process before we arrive at the certificate of debt. Then there's a follow-up question with regard to the certificate of debt as well. Once the office of the AG has issued the certificate of debt, it gets issued in the name of the accounting officer as mentioned, and the accounting officer must then go in terms of the delegation of authority and hold the official or try and recover or recoup from the official that has then permitted or incurred the Material Irregularity Act. Failure of the accounting officer to recoup the money then means the accounting officer becomes liable in their personal capacity as well. So which means the issue of the recovery is also covered from a point of view that if you don't execute your fiduciary responsibility to go and recover, then the accounting officer or the accounting authority will then become liable. And then if the accounting officer or the accounting authority, then obviously if you become you were supposed to be the enforcer, now you become the person who's now liable, the consultation will always be with the executive authority to make sure that the accounting officer then acts on the certificate of debt. But that's obviously a last resort by the time we've exhausted all the consultation processes of seeing whether they've really done something or they haven't done something around it. So it will still always be an audit that will be based on proper risk processes, risk identification processes, processes of having to respond to those processes part of the constitutional mandate. But unlike before, now when we found something and it's included in the audit report as a recommendation, if you don't act upon it, it's then important that you know that the following process will ensue in terms of the remedial action, the referral to investigative bodies, and then ultimately the certificate of debt if no action is taken. What is important to note, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, is as soon as you have some form of remedial action in any report, that report also becomes I want to call it liable or subject for review. It can be then reviewed, whereas currently the audit report of the AG cannot really be reviewed because it's just an opinion. But now because you'll be implicating people personally with certain recommendations that will be required legally, it can become subject to review, and therefore it's important that we follow this process very to the T, if I can almost call it like it, and it must be administratively fair and just as well. That's why the 20 days and the 6 months, the right of reply based on evidence. So the process of when we could arrive at a certificate of debt, if an audit started this year in May, you could probably only issue a certificate of debt sometime next year, let's say July or September, because you needed to have given them time to go and execute the responsibilities as accounting officer. So the process was always aimed to assist those that had the original responsibility to act upon those responsibilities, and that being the accounting officers and the accounting authorities, and we provide them that space, and then we'll come in at the tail end when really there's evidence that there's been failure to take decisive action. There was a question on the retrospective application of the Public Audit Act. If one considers the amendment and when it was promulgated or gazetted, that was on the 1st of April 2019. And in its legislative nature, it says for all audits commencing on the 1st of April or thereafter. So it talks to the audit. So, and again, it's then in line with the mandate of the AG conducting audits. So we already phased in some audits. We had 16 audits, which we communicated to those accounting officers, and we already rolled out a part of the Public Audit Act amendments, the application thereof on some of those audits in 18-19 already. There was a criteria that was applied. The criteria applied was you needed to have consistent and repeated unfavorable audit outcomes, in other words, qualifications or worse, and then you also needed to have high amounts of irregular expenditure, because obviously there is an indication that there might be high level of irregularities taking place in your environment. Unfortunately, because if you consider this, the National Department of Health did not meet all of those criteria, and that's why it was not selected as part of the pilot or the phase-in process. However, there might be certain provincial departments of health that may have been selected, because if you look at the provincial environment, some of them would fit the criteria in being repeatedly unfavorable audit outcomes as well as high levels of irregular expenditure. So, to answer the question more directly around the retrospective application, because the law says it's from the 1st of April and audits starting on or after the 1st of April, we can only look forward. However, we do note that in the environment, we do have multi-year contracts or projects. So if you engaged in a project 5 years ago, the project was started and the contract was signed 5 years ago, and there were irregularities in the project, if management continued to make payments in the current year related to those projects, then we could select that payment and say, but let's go back and determine what went wrong, and therefore opening the scope for the retrospective application. But it does not mean that we will now go and open audits which were conducted 4 or 5 years ago. It will have to be expenditure that we then selected as part of our current year audit, because the essence of the amendment said all audits starting on the 1st of April or going forward. Okay. Chairperson is showing us that we must quickly start wrapping up. There was a question on the write-offs of the irregular expenditure. I'll quickly hand over to Tabero, but before I say that, I'll just talk to the issue that was raised on SAPRA. Unfortunately, the Office of the AG does not give explicit view on competency of personnel hired. All we do is we look from a compliance point of view whether the process was followed as required by the legislation that governs the public service regulations. And then, for example, we'll just say, for particular posts, you yourself should have had a competency framework, and was the person, when you were doing the recruitment, did we comply with the competency framework and the recruitment processes? But as insofar as the competency is concerned, unfortunately, we do not express an explicit view on that. And then there was also a question around the write-off. I'll hand over to Tabero quickly to assist us with that question.
Thank you. The write-off that we see in this in this slide, this is what has been done based on irregular expenditure on authorized authorities that has been identified in government. So write-off usually is when we identify that there's fruitless and unauthorized expenditure, the department then investigates, and then the board then or the accounting officer either condone authorized and then the write-off. Usually with write-offs we find is when either the perpetrator has left and they can't recover it, then they write off because they don't want to continue carrying irregular and fruitless expenditure forever. So they then decide at that point in time that since they will not be able to recoup, then they write off. Sometimes it's because some of the irregular expenditure that was incurred, they couldn't avoid it based on the reason that they then send to Treasury, and Treasury that then does condone it in that write off. This is the situation around write off. The other question I wanted to deal with was there was a question on the overspending on the OHSC. So the current, the OHSC in the prior year had a surplus because there were certain projects that they were not done. OHSC, for example, OHSC has moved offices and they had to get infrastructure to set them up. So in the prior year, they had a surplus. So what they did is they wrote to National Treasury for a rollover. So if you look at that, it seems like they actually have overspent in their current budget. However, the additional expenditure is on the rollovers from the prior year.
If you are done, colleagues, thank you very much. Move on to highlight provinces. Because this committee member still has a long day to be here, we would want to release you, but give us a picture of what is happening in provinces on aid. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Again, Chair, I'll just, by way of moving on quickly, Chair, remind the committee that for this particular section, we'll now be dealing with the national department and the provinces consolidated for all the 10 departments, which we commonly refer to as a sector. Bearing in mind the colors, again, the green is where we want to go, and anything other than yellow is unfortunately unfavorable, where we should not be in terms of financial accounting and audit outcomes. And then we'll also give a high-level snapshot or overview of the HIV grant in terms of some of the work we've done within our mandate on that. And then we'll also conclude with the sector-specific work, especially on infrastructure and IT systems that was done, as well as medical records on those specific focus areas. And then, Chairperson, just before we also continue, we've heard the comments of the Chair as part of